Welcome to the Lost Dog Podcast and the Trans-Pyrenees Race number 2, supported by our race partners, 200 Magazine, Physique, Kinesis, Komoot, Pedaled, and Tailfin.
So when I woke this morning, it was a case of get up and move and get warm. And then I thought I'd get up here once it got light and, you know, grab a bit to eat before tackling the gravel.
In the end, I woke up at like 1:30 in the morning and was like, okay, let's just go. So I left at about 2:30.
Yeah.
To try and make up time, which I think I've done.
Yeah, I've landed and I'm happy with that. I think it's the quicker one. So, and yeah, I wanted to avoid cuts in my tires and something like that. And yeah, I'm happy with that, yeah.
And the road was the worst road you could take to get here. I had 2 flat tires, but there's another guy standing up there. And he has a flat tire and has no spare tubes.
You didn't bring the right bike?
No, sure, 200%. But that was amazing.
I'm Ian Broom, and this is the second of our daily episodes from the mountains. We woke early at control point 3 to find our overnight leader had been joined by 2 more riders, with more hot on their heels. Some chose the longer, faster road to the south, where others headed to the off-road terrain to the north. Would this shorter route to CP3 pay off, or would it all unravel on the gravel? I'm joined by TPR veterans Jim Stewart and Rachel Batt, who are ready to talk us through the stories of the day before running through the perils and pleasures of riding on the rough stuff. Hi, Jim and Rach. Thank you for taking the reins on our first episode yesterday. I was lost in a car on a busy road somewhere with mountains all around me. It was very exciting, but I was not able to podcast. But you were, and you did a great job. Thank you. It's been another exciting day today. What are your first impressions? What's been catching your eye out on the mountains?
Hi, Ian. So it was a dry but reportedly very cold night and a cold, bright morning, and it looks like it's been a clear day for the riders. The biggest change overnight was Robert Muller coming to the front, followed by Julien Wassard. James Loudon was still there or thereabouts, but he was just a bit behind after a bit of a sleep. I think they were part of a group of 8 who certainly this morning had pulled away from the rest of the pack a bit. They'd all had different amounts of sleep.
So yeah, the sleep thing's one of the interesting things, I think, looking at the front of the race. So those 8 riders, Robert and Julien, Max Pierre, James Loudon, Neil Phillips, Alexander Kopp, Christopher Dupourou and Lucas Franciszkiewicz, they're the sort of leading group as it stands on the road. But they all seem to have taken slightly different kind of sleep strategies. So we think that Robert hasn't really slept at all, possibly only maybe an hour, if that. Whereas some of the other riders, James, Neil, Alexander, they've had a bit of a bigger chunk of downtime overnight. And that's probably going to stand them in good stead going forwards, because they presumably got a bit more in the tank now than Robert has. So it's going to be interesting to see how that kind of unfolds going on to CP4 and 5.
Yeah, I mean, Robert was also one of the ones that took the north route. So we had that split, didn't we, in the morning. As we kind of woke up, we could see that as people were approaching CP3, which is where we were, you could see that there was James Loudon had taken the road and he was coming up from the south. And then over on the north was the kind of the gravel route, which no one was really sure how that would work out. We were kind of watching, trying to see how it kind of panned out over the course of the morning. I can say from having been in CP3 that the people that went on the gravel route were significantly more grumpy about the idea when they reached us, whereas James kind of managed to kind of get there first, even though it looked like he might be behind, like it looked like a shortcut, but it didn't kind of work out quite that way.
Yeah, it was interesting in the top 10 riders. As they passed through that decision point, it was quite cool sitting, watching where they would go from Sort, whether they'd take the gravel or whether they'd take the road. It's interesting that five of them took the gravel and five of them took the road. Now, I think looking at the rest of the race unfolding behind, quite a lot more of them are taking the road. But certainly in the front 10, it was very interesting watching that deciding point. And the gravel route, as you say, has obviously taken its toll on the riders, and in particular on one of the pre-race favourites, Sam Thompson, cap number two, who finished TPR one in second place. Unfortunately, he, by the sounds of things, has had a string of mechanicals, and it's led him to scratching from the race.
Yeah, he was out there for a while, and we weren't sure. We could see that the dot was, he was kind of paused, to say the least. So we were kind of waiting for him to move. But then we had word that he decided to scratch. But that gravel route, kind of making that choice. Were you watching, kind of thinking about what you might have done, or was it you just really eager to see, you know, the results?
Yeah, so it's I guess it's funny looking at it from afar, because we were always set on taking the gravel, really, because I guess because we're mid-pack riders, we're not really pushing for the victory, as it were. We can take a bit more of an adventure. So probably the road route south has proved to be the better option, I'd say, mostly because of the reduction of fatigue that riders will have got from not having to tackle that rougher terrain. But for us, I think passing the opportunity to take that remote mountain road, the old smugglers route, on the gravel, I don't think we would have wanted to do that. Certainly on TPR number one, there was a sort of similar split point. And I think actually almost everybody took the gravel that time, and that was a different smugglers route into Andorra, up the Port de Cabas. And we ended up doing that in the dark, which wasn't great. So I think that probably would have dictated which way we would have gone on the day if we were in the race. But certainly before we would have reached that point, we would have preferred the gravel option just for fun, if you can call it that.
And you say you've ridden part of that. You've ridden the part up into Andorra, right?
Not on that stretch of gravel. We rode a different stretch. But we have ridden, so the going on round the road route, we actually rode down from Andorra the way the riders on the road route are riding up. I know it's a road, but it's quite draggy. Like, it's a long climb up there. It's not a massively steep gradient, but it is a draggy climb. I mean, I can imagine that it would feel for those that take the road, that the road goes on and on and on. And then I think it turns off a way that we didn't go, so we don't have experience of. But I think that, by the looks of things, turns onto a climb before dropping down into CP3.
Yeah, so should we go through the order in which people came in, in which the riders came in?
Yeah, so looking at the sort of riders that have arrived so far, there are actually not that many that have reached CP3. So at this point, I'm just looking live now on the Trans-Pyrenees website, and there are 15 riders who have reached CP3. The first to get there was James Loudon, followed by Robert Muller. He wasn't that far behind, actually, a little less than an hour. And then we have Julien Roissard in third place, and then Neil Phillips. So Neil's actually sort of slipped a couple of places in the rankings compared to his arrival at CP1. But I think he's actually gained some ground again since then, and he seems to be making good progress as the riders progress towards CP4. And then just to round off that top kind of five arrivals, Alexander Kopp came into CP3 at fifth place. In terms of the women's field, Jana Kessenheimer's having a storming race, and she came into CP3 at 10th place, and she's comfortably holding her position in the top 10 on the road as we speak.
Yeah, and then we have Simone. Have you been keeping track of her as well?
In the women's race, I think if the tracker was right, so both Jana and Simone had... in fact, all of the women in the race looked like they had some good sleep last night. So Jana's got a decent gap on Simone, but she's not that far behind. And it looks like she's having a strong race as well. In fact, all of the women, to be honest, look like they haven't spread out a lot more than maybe 20 to 30K between them, other than Jana off the front. So it looks like they're all having good races. So far, I think we've seen Jana and Simone opt for the road option to get to CP3. It'll be interesting to see if any of the other women opt for the gravel. We know that both Ange Walker and Elena Madonna are running fatter tyres. So I'm assuming that they're riding those in preparation for that.
Yeah, you would expect so, wouldn't you? It's been really interesting, the tyre talk today in the media team. We've been talking about trying to work out what each rider is using. What have you made of it?
Yeah, so I think in these, more and more ultra races seem to have a gravel element. So people kind of expect it a bit more than they perhaps used to a few years ago. But you quite often see that the gravel is a relatively small proportion of the race as a whole. So you get quite a lot of riders that choose road-oriented tyres and hope to do the best they can on the gravel stretches. So I think there are a few riders who've been having some serious trouble on the gravel, running kind of 28 mil road tyres. I know there have been quite a few punctures on that parkour for those early arrivals. Sorry, it's not parkour, but that route. I mean, personally, we would opt for a fatter tyre, I think, for added comfort. You might lose a little on speed, but what you gain in comfort makes up for it enormously in our experience. But if you're at the front of the race and you're trying to push hard and get there as quickly as possible, then those roads size is more like 28, 30, 32 mil tyres are kind of the choice you kind of need to make. And then it's really how well you can handle your bike on the gravel stints to kind of look after those, I guess. So yeah, it's interesting to see that there's a range of choices been made in the field.
I really enjoyed Max Priya. Spoke to him. He came in to CP3 and he'd taken the gravel route. And I asked him how he'd gone, and he just said he'd brought the wrong bike. So not just the wrong tyres, he said, I just got the wrong bike. I've got a gravel bike at home. And his tyres were 28s. And he'd just gone across this real rough stuff at in the north there. How would you fancy that?
28s on the rough stuff? No, I'd have taken the road. I think if I had a gravel bike at home and I decided to bring the road bike or the more road bike for speed, then I would have taken the road option, not the gravel option.
I think he was thinking the same.
Yeah, I think he would have been.
I think I saw an interesting report about Julien Wasser, who'd also had quite a lot of punches on the gravel route to CP3. I think he said he had two tubes and two patches, but had five punches. And I think he ended up riding, my understanding was he ended up riding with three inner tubes in one tyre, but none of which could hold air. So I think, I hope he sorted himself out now, but that was going to seriously hinder his race. He seems to still be in the top 10, so he must have done something right post that point.
Yeah, that is exactly what he did. And he too sort of rolled up. and he followed Robert, actually. So Robert Muller came in second. He couldn't believe that he was in second position. He was like, after going through that, I'm in second. And he said, there's a guy up there who's got all of his inner tubes are all gone. He's just up there. And then he rolled down, no problem. He solved the problem. And then he was off to sort it all out in some shop somewhere. But yeah, it was great. It was really just so fascinating to see that, like, how they kind of the first five or so riders came in, all with sort of totally different stories, having had different experiences, but still within, you know, half an hour of each other, an hour of each other, something like that. It was great. Should we talk about the pairs?
So in the pairs race, Ines and Isabel were back at the front after the night, and Paul and Steve weren't far behind them. In fact, five of the six pairs were all within about 30K of each other this morning. Interestingly, nearly all the field, so on parkour two, there's a little stretch of gravel at the end of it. So this is before the gravel that we've just been talking about that takes you to CP3. It's an optional stretch. So you can either take that little stretch of gravel to get back on the road, or you can go back on yourself a bit down parkour two and then drop round on a longer stretch on the road. And most riders have opted to take that short part, a bit of gravel, even perhaps those who might not like to ride it. But there's a handful of riders that have taken the road, and of particular interest is that Paul and Stephen, pair 148 A and B, took that option. Unfortunately, it seems to me have meant that they've slipped back into third place in the pairs category. But we've also heard that I think Stephen has been having issues with his DI2, so the electronic shifting on his bike that's not working correctly. So it's possible that, bearing in mind how little amount they've slipped, really, it's possible that it's that that's hampered their progress rather than the longer route.
Yeah, how do you deal with that when you're riding in a pair? It'd be really interesting to hear your thoughts on that, because it must be frustrating, but also you have to be understanding of each other and kind of work together to get through those problems rather than just being kind of left on your own. How do you deal with that?
In our case, because Jim's the mechanic, I tend to just get very angry at my bike, and then Jim takes over.
Yeah, I think when you're in a pair, you've got to keep both of you moving, and you've got to keep working together as a pair. You can't just ride off and leave your other the other part of your pair and wait for them in a coffee shop down the road and hope for the best. So you kind of, I don't know, it depends on the person you're riding with, I suppose. You can either do what we do, and I sort of get involved and help out and make it work, and we try and fix it as swiftly as possible and move on, or you can stand around and watch your mate sort out their bike. But you can't ride it up, so you may as well offer some constructive input at least. I guess it can be frustrating if you're not having the problems and your partner is. It's not their fault, so there's no point in getting angry at them. It's just an unfortunate part of paired racing. And with them, you know, when there are two of you, there are two bikes to go wrong. Possibly, you know, in the course of the race, that increases the chance of something happening, some mechanical happening to you that, you know, might not happen if you're riding solo. But you just got to take it on the chin, fix it as quickly as possible, and move on.
Yeah, I spoke to them both on registration day, actually, and they were ambitious. They said they were looking to win the pairs race, but they also talked about the advantage of having known each other for 30 years. And, you know, it meant that any kind of issues, they felt like they could deal with it and they could sort of problem solve together and move on. And it sounds like that's what's been required today by the look of it.
Yeah. Patience is definitely a prerequisite of pairs riding.
We need to talk about a few scratches. Not many, but there are some to cover. Do you want to take us through who's had to scratch so far?
Yeah, there's been a couple of scratches overnight. We heard that Cap 133 Tim Dool has scratched. Cap 112 Radoslav Rogoz has scratched due to illness. We've heard already, Cap 2 Samuel Thompson had to scratch due to mechanicals. And Cap 114 Alain Servan-Puisot has scratched due to illness.
Obviously, the talking point of the day, we've touched on some of it already, there's the gravel. So we've spoken about it in the previous episode of the podcast that you recorded. It was in the kind of the intro show, it was mentioned. Everyone knows that there is going to be choices around gravel and road sections, and that's obviously had an impact on the race today. What's your thoughts? Talk us through your approach. You kind of, if I'm right, you love the gravel, right, Rachel?
Yeah, we love gravel. I didn't used to. It's only been maybe a couple of years, three now, because previously I was very nervous and twitchy. But because we love these long races and there's quite a bit of gravel in them, to sort of reduce my nerves, we did quite a lot of work on trying to find little bits of gravel to ride at home. And now we regularly go out on gravel. So yeah, it's an exciting feature of a race for us. We like it when there's gravel stretches that takes you to some really stunning places. Yes, it can be difficult to handle, but yeah, the views are just really pretty. Yeah, it's great. I really enjoy it.
And what sort of effect, what are the differences, I suppose, with like gravel and road? I know they're kind of obvious, but like what are the difference in terms of like the physical side of things, but also maybe like the mental side of things? Is it like an entirely different experience, particularly when you've already got so many kilometres in your legs?
Yeah, so I think when you're riding gravel sections, obviously you're bouncing around a bit more. So your arms and legs sort of act as suspension, particularly if you're riding a sort of rigid bike, as everyone here will be doing in TPR. As a consequence of that, you've got to be sort of up for it, I guess. On the road, it's less of a problem because whilst you've got occasional rougher sections or perhaps potholes and things you might want to avoid, on a gravel road or track, there's so many more things that could go wrong. You hit a rock at the wrong time or angle or whatever, and you could give yourself a puncture so much more easily. But also that shock transfers up through your body, and it obviously takes a physical toll. But I guess the main thing, the mental side of having that additional concentration requirement, because you've got to pick your lines all the way through to make sure that you traverse a section of gravel in the most smooth way possible. And it, even more difficult is trying to do that in the dark, particularly as these routes tend to be in fairly remote areas where there's not any sort of light pollution from nearby villages or towns or anything. So you're really just there with hopefully a clear night. You've got moonlight and you've got your own bike lights, and that's all you've got to guide you through. So you really have to focus driving on gravel in the dark. And that's probably one of the things that will dictate some people's choice as to whether they choose the road or gravel section to CP3. Particularly for the mid-pack riders who are likely to arrive tomorrow. And I guess with the road section, you just take away a lot of that stress that you can induce. But on the other hand, it can add so much to your experience because you get to go to more unusual places, more remote places, different perspectives and views of the mountains that you wouldn't get if you just followed the road routes. For me, I'd always try to choose the gravel if it's an option.
And how do you think it would have affected today's race? Because there was, as we've already discussed, there was like a clear kind of a divide between the two routes, the road and the gravel, and the experience seemed to be quite different. Do you think it'll have any kind of longer term effect on the race?
I think that the gravel will have a long term impact on the race. It sounds like it's been quite tough to ride. And quite a lot of the riders are on fairly skinny tyres with high pressure. So I think that a lot of them will be rattled, literally. And they might recover fine the next day or two. But I think I certainly find that if we've been on a short-ish gravel ride, my legs can feel the next day like I've been on a very long equivalent road ride. So I think the impact, that there could be an ongoing impact, and those riders that have chosen to take the gravel may struggle to recover. We can already see that taking the gravel itself may have impacted on Robert Muller's race. I mean, he was ahead this morning, first thing, and it is possible that he lost ground by taking the gravel. I mean, he did, in that he came into CP3 in second position. He pushed through the night and looked like he was going to hit the CP first, but the gravel, even though it's a shorter stretch, looks like it did slow him down.
So on the race last year, there was a mandatory section of gravel on one of the parkour. Not last year, 2019, the last edition. And we had bikes that were gravel bikes set up with fairly chunky tyres, probably a bit overkill for the race as a whole. But we were sort of comfortably riding our way down this little track. And we came across another rider who he had a very lightweight road bike set up, lightweight kit, deep section carbon wheels and carbon soles on his road shoes. And he was trying to walk down this loose gravel track. And it was sort of hilarious to watch, really. I mean, he looked like Bambi on ice as we were going down. I felt a little bit sorry for him as we sort of raced past on our decent sized gravel tires. But that just shows you that, you know, there's plenty of ways to tackle a race like this, and you don't necessarily have to all ride the same type of bike or equipment, and you can still make it to the finish.
And where are things now as we record? So we're recording on sort of evening time, day two. So where are things now, and kind of what are you excited about? How can you see things panning out?
So right now, James Loudon and the front pack of 10 or so, James has passed through CP4 and is on his way to CP5 at the coast. And we've heard that he's aiming to get there by the end of the day today. I suppose going on from them hitting the coast, still talking about the front runners, it'll be interesting to see if Robert and Julien and Max sleep, because they're the guys that we're not sure how much sleep they've had. So it'll be interesting to see if they slow up. Looking at the back at the mid-pack riders, or I guess from my perspective, the women's race in particular, I'm really interested to see whether Eleanor McDonough and Ange Walker take the gravel. I've been watching the gravel section all day and cheering everybody every time somebody turns off to go that way. So, I'll be really interested to see who else takes the gravel. I'm not expecting Paul and Stephen, the pair 148, to go that way because of Stephen's mechanical issue with his DI2. I can't imagine for one second that he thinks gravel will be a good idea. And then going onwards, once they turn at the coast, it's going to be pretty fast onto the start of the raid route. And I guess we'll just see how it unfolds from there.
Yeah, I was just going to say that, touching back on the pairs again. So we know that Paul and Stephen are a strong pair. They raced TPR number one, and I think Paul raced TCR this year as well. And we expect that they're going to take the road. But what's sort of interesting is that Izzy and Innes have gone for the gravel towards CP3. So it's going to be interesting to see how that pairs race kind of unfolds over the next day or so, to see whether that sort of slows Innes and Isabel down, or whether they take it in their stride and they're set up for that and maintain their lead. So it's going to be really interesting to see how that pans out over the next couple of days. But sort of another thing on CP3 generally is that the cutoff for CP3 is tomorrow afternoon, and that's going to have a big impact on the mid-pack race, because those that want to make a GC finish need to hit each checkpoint within the opening times. So if you are touch and go as to whether you might make the CP in time, and you've got the choice of whether to take the road or gravel, you now have the benefit of looking at the media channels and how other people have fared as they've passed through that section. And you might be able to make a bit more of an informed choice as to how your race might pan out if you choose one or the other. So if you're tight on time, you may now choose the road rather than the gravel, just because that seems that the gravel has taken its toll on other riders already. And you might stand a better chance of catching that CP cutoff.
Fantastic. Let's leave it at that and look forward to tomorrow and seeing what it brings. If you have any questions you'd like us to tackle, send them to tpr@transcontinental.cc, and make sure you follow the TPR2 hashtag on Instagram and updates from our social media channels. Thank you to our race partners, 200 Magazine, Physique, Kinesis, Komoot, Pedaled, and Tailfin.